MIT, right? As far as I
yes.
remember.
MIT
he's
and
a very good econometrician. He has very good papers in theory. We are trying to actually invite him to Sheikh University, but he is quite busy in Pakistan. We couldn't convince him, unfortunately. Otherwise, our publication record will be increasing a lot. He is also a monetary policy committee member right now at Central Bank of Pakistan, and he is serving in many associations. He is a prolific writer, especially in his later life. He started working on Islamic economics, Islamic finance. Even he started criticizing econometrics. So you will listen to him today. We are very, very much delighted to have him here today. And he came to here actually just yesterday night, right? Or yesterday?
Yesterday morning.
Yesterday morning. There was a conference organized by ILEM on Islamic economics and finance. It's going to start today at 6 p.m. at Istanbul University. Hopefully we are going to host it next year at Sheikh University, but if you are interested in Islamic economics, you are very much encouraged to go to that conference. It's going to be on today. It's starting. It's mostly ceremonial speeches today, but if you are really interested, I recommend you guys go to that on Saturday and Sunday. They are very interesting talks about the Islamic economics and finance methodologies. I will be there on Sunday. I am chairing one session, but for those especially interested in that, very much recommended to go there. ILEM has been organizing this for about 6 or 7 years now. One of them was already held at Sheikh University back in Altunzade. Hopefully, we might host this next year at Sheikh University. There are very good academics coming to ILEM, and one of them is for sure Asad Zaman. And this is one press speech about that conference as well. Again, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Ahmed. Assalamu alaikum. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I'm very happy to see so many young students. Is this on? I'm not sure. But maybe it's on. Everybody can hear me? Okay, good. That's good enough then. Yes. So I had actually a different audience in mind. I thought it was be the MBA faculty, not the students. Otherwise, I would have prepared a different talk. But anyway, I think that this is...
Our
faculty, yes. This is the future academicians. So I have a very important message, which is very different from anything that is currently being said. And so let me prepare for that, because people get shocked when I say that, so I have to prepare to break the news gently so that it doesn't cause so much shock. It will always cause shock. So first, let me take you back to about 1440 years ago, when the message of Allah Ta'ala reached the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and this message starts with the words "Iqra bismi rabbikal ladhi khalaq," yani this was the first wahi, and it has goes on to say "Allama al insana ma lam ya'lam," that Allah Ta'ala gave knowledge to man that which he did not have. And now the nature of this knowledge, what was this knowledge that Allah Ta'ala gave, this is the question, because we can see the effects of this knowledge, that the Arabs at that time were the most backward people on the planet. They themselves call it Dar al-Jahiliya, the period of darkness, and at the same time, and ignorance. At the same time, there were very advanced civilizations on the planet. There was China and Rome and Persia and Egypt. They all had very advanced technologies. The technology of the Egyptians is that the pyramids were are so spectacular feats of engineering that even modern engineers, recently I read an article which says that today with laser technology we can cut stones in such a way that the angles will match perfectly, but without laser technology I don't know how they did it. So anyway, the point is that the knowledge that was given to the Arabs, who were backwards and ignorant, made them the leaders of the world and created a civilization which dominated the world for 1,000 years. So there must have been something there in this message. So for that there is no doubt that there was something. But the question which is important for today is there anything in that message which remains useful for us today? Because today the Muslims are, if not the most backwards, pretty backwards in every dimension relative to others. So can that message have the same impact today that it did 1400 years ago? Today the Muslims as a whole think no. Yani, for the kafirs it's fine for them to believe that. And that is what their standard stance is. The historians who have analyzed the rise of Islam, they say that yes, Islam was a very powerful message for its own time. But the needs of the modern times have changed drastically. And today, if you want to prosper and progress, then you have to learn from us. We are the leaders of the world today. And you have no option. And today we have generally believed them and said that yes, Islam is no longer of any use to us. And what we need is to learn the technology and science and business techniques and economics, everything from the West. So what I'm going to say is that I'm going to contest this idea, and I'm going to say that yes, even today Islam still contains the key to our guidance and change, and the knowledge that was brought by Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and given to the Sahaba, it still has the same revolutionary potential today that it did 1400 years ago. And today it can change the conditions of the Muslims. And so that's one part of the message. The second part of the message is that the knowledge in the social sciences is not the same as the knowledge in the physical sciences in the West. And although the West itself claims that the two are the same, and so we have believed this claim, and therefore we think that just like their physics can take you to the moon, so the social science that they have and the business techniques that they have can take us to the moon in another sense. But this is not true. The social sciences of the West are very seriously mistaken. They are founded on wrong ideas about the nature of human beings, and they have caused massive damage to the planet. The business techniques that we are learning from the West are designed to destroy the planet, and they already have, in the sense that over the past 50 years, about half of the living species of animals have been destroyed by the corporate search for profits, which explicitly, after Friedman legitimized it, they said that the only goal of business is to make profits and everything else is irrelevant. We can behave unethically, immorally, etc. So, for example, the business model in use in Harvard teaches people that yes, you can kill babies for a profit, and people do. They are selling baby milk powder all over the world, and it is known that this will cause deaths, and you can calculate how many deaths it will cause. The American arms industry is selling semi-automatic weapons in USA, and every day there is a shooting, mass shooting. There has been 360 or more in the last year. And every day, more than some person picks up a gun and kills random people. And all efforts by the public to change this have been blocked by corporations who fund the campaigns of all of the senators by paying them millions of dollars. And so it is impossible to introduce a bill in the Congress which would ban arms sales in the USA, even though the vast majority of the public wants to do so. Why? Because the corporations are told that you have to maximize profits, And one way that they do that is to make sure that the legal framework is favors them. So what is being taught at Harvard is not good, and even the people at Harvard have recognized this and are trying to make changes, but not very successfully, in the sense that recently, because of a large number of scandals associated with graduates from the top business schools, Harvard introduced a pledge of conduct voluntarily that I will try to serve my consumers and so on, yani high ethical moral conduct. But only about one third of the graduates signed this pledge, and many actively opposed it, saying, no, our job is to make profits and we can't afford to be bound by ethical rules because that will lower our profits. So the business models currently in use are extremely harmful for the welfare of mankind. They look for selfish and personal profits at the expense of the society. And the social science in general, what has it led to? If you look at the society, the culture of USA, it has been, the family life has been destroyed, which is the main source of happiness. What economics teaches and what business also teaches is what I have called the Coca-Cola theory of happiness, in the sense that it teaches that your happiness depends on, you know, these big posters they advertise that if you drink Coca-Cola, you'll become happy. And so if somebody absorbed this idea and he stacks his refrigerator full of Coca-Cola and thinks that he has found a formula for lifetime of happiness, he would be very sadly mistaken. However, economic theory is exactly that. It says that the purpose of rational behavior is to maximize the pleasure we get out of consumption. So this is actually a ridiculous theory in the sense that it does not lead to happiness. And the thing that is important, the part of the message that I am trying to say that is shocking, is that this is all a fraud. Yani, economics claims to be a positive theory. It claims to be a description of human behavior, but it is actually a normative theory. It says that this type of behavior, that is maximizing the pleasure you get out of consumption, is the ideal form. And is the ideal form of behavior. And people who don't behave that way, they are irrational. They are stupid. Similarly, it describes an ideal society, and that is the one in which you have perfect competition. And this is also a normative principle. So Ahmed Farooq Aysan was saying that what we have in economics, in Islamic economics, is an alternative normative model. So what I would like to say is that's not correct. Islam, Islamic economics and Islamic business offers us three different elements. One is a positive theory, which accurately describes human behavior. And this is, in this, it is different from the neoclassical economics or the neoclassical or the standard Western business models, which do not accurately capture human behavior. They capture one part, one aspect of human behavior, but miss many others. So there is a positive element. Then there is a normative element, an ideal towards which we should all strive. So the economic theory and the business theory that you have been taught teaches you to behave like animals, in the sense that you are to maximize the pleasure you get out of consumption. You are not supposed to care anything about anybody else. You are not supposed to have any social responsibilities. And you are supposed to be only concerned with profits and nothing else. You have, so the model of human behavior is a person with a head and a stomach. There is no heart and there is no spirit in the economic model, and there's a similar model is used in business theories also. and in political science. So these models are highly based on a highly misleading and incomplete model of human behavior, and that's why the whole structure which is built upon this model is wrong. So on the one hand, there is a mistake in the positive dimension. On the other hand, there is a mistake in the normative dimension. If you actually follow the prescription that economic theory tells you to follow, that is, have no heart, try to grab the maximum amount of pleasure that you can for yourself, which is actually, yani, the message is very powerful. It is actually penetrates our hearts and minds. And today, the level of selfishness and greed that we see in Islamic societies is much higher than it was some time ago. In my time, when I was your age, there would in our society, it was not possible for a doctor to come up and say that I am learning medicine because I want to make a profit from the sickness of the poor and the miserable people. This would be socially unacceptable. He might have had such a sentiment in his heart. This is possible. People have greed, but there were many people who were sincere and were seeking to do service. Today, if somebody gets up and says that I'm learning medicine because I want to serve humanity, people will laugh at him. That how can this be? Because it is the norm is that people are selfish and they are motivated by money only. So the norms have changed drastically. So the normative principle that you should look only for yourself, this is extremely harmful to our happiness. It destroys happiness. And this is something which has been established by a field of study known as happiness studies, which emerged after the Easterlin paradox was discovered, when the economist said that, you know, for 100 years we have been pursuing this growth, and it has been very effective. We have the GNP per capita has become 100 times what it was. People today live like princes used to live. So has the level of happiness increased? So it turned out that it had not. So there are many, many indications, suicide rates, etc., 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 which I don't want to go into right now. But a vast amount of different types of evidence came to the very definite and clear conclusion that consumption has a short-term impact on happiness. If you are hungry and you eat something, you become happy. But if you look at long-term happiness, there is zero correlation. That is quite amazing. There is not a small correlation, there is zero correlation. And if you think about it, and that's what happiness studies led to, that long-term happiness depends on two things. One is character. If you have a good character, meaning that you are kind, compassionate, generous, sympathetic, honest, all of these things which the ancients used to say, which have become neglected by the moderns, these are the things which are matter for long-term happiness. And the other thing is social relationships, basically your family, your friends, your community. So as the hadith says, the mu'min loves and he is loved. So this loving others and being loved, these are the sources of happiness. It is not about, established by secular atheist researchers, that people get more pleasure out of giving to others than they get from selfish behavior. And we can all understand that because we all have hearts. And we can, so this is something which is built into the heart of human beings, that they become happy by giving and not by greedily grabbing for themselves. So the meaning of this is that the normative principle that is used in the West, that this is your formula for happiness, try to get the maximum amount of money, this is simply wrong. And in fact, people who are at their end of life have been surveyed in their various places where they go. They have been asked that, okay, now you are terminally ill, so what is your advice? What is the lesson that you get from your life? So a vast majority said that, you know, I made the mistake of thinking that the career was very important and the acquisition of money and material goods was very important. And now, at the end of my life, I realized that these things did not matter. And what mattered was my family and my friends. And I did not give them enough time because I was busy pursuing my career and trying to build up my bank balance, which I will leave behind me for. So the Prophet ﷺ also said that man says, my wealth, but his is only that which he eats and which he wears and which he uses up. And the other doesn't belong to him, it belongs to his heirs. So today it is true that a man who has $1 million, he works to get 2 million or 5 million, and he doesn't realize that this is more money than he will ever consume. So there is no point in acquiring more money. And this is the teaching of the business schools also, that make more and more money. Don't worry about money itself has become the object of pursuit, whereas money itself is never a goal. Money is always a means to an end. So as a normative principle, the principles being taught by business schools and by economics are, you can say, poisonous to our welfare, to our happiness. Even if you are not a Muslim, it doesn't matter, in the sense that human happiness does not depend on increasing consumption. And so if you absorb this message, which people do, it has been studied. There's a very nice article by Julie Nelson called Poisoning the Well, How Economic Theory Damages Our Moral Imagination. And it says, basically, it describes how natural human tendencies for kindness and generosity are overcome by training in economics. And they learn to be selfish and they learn to behave in a bad way towards others, because economics says that this is rational behavior. So I'm making a three-point argument. I'm saying that the theories of social science are founded on a model of human behavior which is deeply flawed. They have a normative model which is again deeply flawed, and Islam has one third element. Islam also offers a model of behavior which is much more complex and much more accurate. It also has a model of normative behavior, what should be, and it has a third element which does not exist in the economic theory, which is transformative. That is, how do you take what you have and convert it towards the ideal? So, for example, the Sahaba, the Arabs started out from a very bad place. They were burying their own daughters alive. They were fighting each other and killing each other for small things. And after the training that was given to them in the process of their learning the deen, they became such people that Allah Ta'ala praises them in the Quran, saying that these are people who give to others while they are themselves hungry. So there are these three elements in the Islamic model, which is description. People, inna nafsa ammaratin bisu, people have the drive to be bad. They have selfishness and they have the desire to do bad things built into their souls. And that's called nafsul ammara. And they also have an attraction towards the good built into their souls. So the human heart is a battleground between good and evil, and it is a continuous battle from birth to death. It is not that once you become good, then you will remain good forever. A person who has been a saint for all his life, he can become tempted and he can fall. So even a prophet can make mistakes, yani be tempted towards evil. And on the other hand, a person who has committed 100 murders, he can also make tawbah and become a saint. So both possibilities are present. And so if you run regressions on this person who has committed 100 murders in a time sequence, and you say what he'll do next, you will never be able to say that he does tawbah and becomes a saint, because it's just not part of that trend. And that is why econometric theory is seriously mistaken, because basically all of econometrics is based on the idea that you look at a pattern in the past and you predict that the same pattern will continue in the future. This is obviously not a correct methodology, there are correct methodologies we can use, but that's a separate topic. All right, so I have described the foundation. Now I would like to describe how this works in practice. So this is a model for entrepreneurship which has been developed from on the basis of Islamic concepts, and on every point it is opposed to the standard dominant Western models. Basically, before I describe the entrepreneurship model, I want to say that in the Western model, the one that is being taught in Harvard and in all over the world in imitation of Harvard, is the one in which you are told that the bottom line is everything, everything is permissible to increase the bottom line. Some people, yani, talk about corporate social responsibility, but that's also part of the bottom line. Basically, because businesses became very unpopular, corporations were, because they were behaving in very immoral manners. So some people said that no, we should exercise corporate social responsibility because that's good for the bottom line. So even that is not, that's done because to avoid a bad reputation, so as and that will increase profit. So it's a meaningless type of corporate social responsibility. So basically the bottom line is everything, and all is fair in love and war and the pursuit of profits. So there are no ethical standards which bind you. You can do whatever you like. You can, the tobacco industry hid the connection between cancer and smoking because that was good for their profits. The sugar industry in the 80s, it became clear that sugar is causing massive health damage to the American public. They are getting heart attacks, diabetes, obesity, etc. And the research showed that it is the sugar. So they suppressed that research. Nobody found out. And instead, they substituted this myth, which is now widely believed, that eating tereya and oil, this is harmful for our health. So now we all try to have low-fat diets, and we have believe in this myth that eating oil is very harmful and it causes heart attacks, because you see this oil goes in and it gets converted to fat, which clogs our arteries. Completely bogus. There is no medical support for this. In fact, it's the sugar which causes this thing, and the mechanism is more complex. But and now this is being rediscovered. But the point that I'm trying to make is that the search for profits led to advertising campaign which created misinformation which everybody believed, and it maximized their profits, but it caused massive damage to humanity. And this is happening every day. That is, the corporations in their search for profits, they have actually created a multi-million dollar campaign to sow doubt about the climate change, which has been by now been so, yani, so certainly that we can say with 100% certainty, or as close as you can get humanly to it, that climate change is occurring. It has already gone very far, and it is caused by human actions. But the anti-climate change industry, which wants to protect the corporate profits that are being made by burning carbons, basically, is creating doubt. So, for example, Trump says that this is just a Chinese propaganda to lower our business profits and make our businesses less competitive. So where is this coming from? This is coming from, so this corporate, this industry, the Seven Sisters, they are willing to destroy the planet in order to make more profits, because corporations are not human beings. They are just an entity. So, so the model that the MBA model says that you serve people in order to make money. Making money is the goal. Now, at the root of the Islamic model, Islam says that the honest tujjar, the honest businessman, will stand next to the siddiqeen, the shuhada, the salihin on the day of judgment. So the question is, how can we do business so that it becomes an act of worship and so that it acquires this high status? Well, For that, you have to reverse the Harvard formula. You say that instead of providing service for money, you will make money in order to provide service. So you see, if you stand up and say that, okay, I'm now going to serve mankind and I'm going to prepare bread, ekmek, and I'm going to give it for free to everybody who needs it. All right, so you can do it for one day, maybe 2 days, and then you will run out of money and energy, and so you will not be able to carry out this mission for very long. So then if you do a business and in such a way that you earn profits, which allow you to live comfortably and allow you to pay your employees and allow you to buy the resources, and for the earning of profits, your niyyah is that, well, if I earn these profits, then I will be able to provide this service for a long time. So then earning that money is also part of your worship. So it becomes, because actually serving the creation of God is out of the love of God is worship, because the hadith says that all of the creation is the family of Allah. And if you serve them, Allah Ta'ala will love you. So this is a reversal, yani a means ends change. On the one hand, you have the model in which you serve in order to make money. On the other hand, you have a model in which you make money in order to serve. And Islam does not say that you should live at the minimum necessary standards. You can live comfortably. Allah Ta'ala says, kulu washrabu, and eat, drink, and wear beautiful clothes, but wala tusrifu, don't waste, don't spend excess. And that is exactly the capitalist economy is built on wasteful consumption, because capitalist economy massively overproduces consumer goods. So it needs to create consumers to buy all of this junk. So somebody calculated that in last year, the last year for which he had statistics, about $100 million worth of products were purchased by consumers in the advanced countries, which were never used. They were picked up and they were left in their packets and then they were thrown away, because the MBA teaches you how to play with the emotions of the consumers in such a way that they just get tempted to buy, they make impulse purchases of things which they don't need. So the models that are in use are very harmful, very damaging. And we have alternative models that we can create. So this is one of them, which is actually currently being taught at IBA, Institute of Business Administration, which is one of our leading schools in Karachi. And it has been extremely successful. And so I will briefly go through this. So it starts by the idea that how can we do tijarat in such a way that this becomes an act of worship. So it goes through the standard definitions of entrepreneurship, which are used in West. I will not cover those. So it says that there are three models. One of them is the standard model, which is currently being taught most of the time. And in this model, you say that, okay, I set myself a big goal. I will have a company which is a $1 million company. It will have this vision and this mission and so on. And so you set a big target, then you find out where can I get the means. If you need to get a loan for this, you get yourself a loan. If you need to, you know, whatever needs to be done, you search for the means. First you set your goal, then you look for the means that will reach that goal. As opposed to this model, which is the standard one, a new one has been introduced, which is called the effectuation model, which is much closer to Islamic ideas. And basically that has been used as a basis to create the Islamic model. And then there is the Quranic view, which we will. So the model that has been introduced by Dr. Shahid Qureshi of IBA is called the E-plus model, which I will discuss briefly. So this is the standard model which is being taught, that you first choose a goal and then you search for the means to achieve that goal. And the problems with this model is that it focuses on a grand vision and then says, okay, what's going to be my strategy? And you try to use the latest techniques. And then the problem is that you are constrained by resources. Sometimes you don't have the resources necessary to achieve that goal. You want to do things on a large scale, encourages competition and encourages taking huge loans which you cannot repay. There is a pressure to achieve high goals. There is a very high rate of failure and a very small rate of learning from failure. So new startups in the US have a failure rate of about 79% or so, last that I heard. So the alternative model reverses these processes. It says that instead of making a goal, first look at what you have. So this is actually what is taught when people come into this model. By the way, this model has turned, Shahid Qureshi takes people off the street with no education, and he puts them through this 6-month entrepreneurship, or it might be 3 months, I don't really remember, and he teaches them. So he says that, okay, you look at what you have. So there's no one-size-fits-all model. Look at what you have. Look at what the resources that are available to you. Look at your skills. And then, in the light of this, decide what you can do. So instead of working with an imaginary goal, so we look at different possible goals that can be achieved with what we have, which will be small goals, no big vision. I mean, so it's opposite of... So we'll reach for small, achievable goals. And so basically, the contrast between the two models is that in the first one, I've already covered that. So effectuation means that see what you can do. I mean, instead of trying to make a big impact, constrain yourself to the things that are in your capacity. So there's a joke which illustrates what is being said effectively, which goes like this. There was this meeting of, men who were all complaining about how their wives dominate them. So one man who was very thin, he said that, Ida, this is not the way in my house. In my house, I am in control, and I whatever I say goes. So the other men asked him very surprised that, how do you manage this? We would like to learn from you. He said, you see, I have made a deal with my wife. I will take care of all of the important things, and she will take care of all of the unimportant things. I said, oh, and how does that work? He says, you know, I decide on whether Gorbachev should intervene in Syria, whether America should bomb Iraq, and whether there should be peace, whether there should be war, what's happening in Europe. I make all these big decisions. And as far as what is going to be cooked today, where the children will go to school, and all of these trivial things, my wife makes the decisions there. So this is the effectuation model, that do the things which you can do and don't worry about the big vision. So Shahid Qureshi goes through to discuss some of the good things in the effectuation model and some of the things which are missing from the effectuation model. One of these is that there is no discussion of morality, environmental, social, and ethical dimensions are missing. And then it is basically, again, basically a selfish and maximization type model. So these are missing elements, and these are things which we can add from the Islamic perspective. And so there is a model which has been developed in IBA, which adds the Islamic components to this. So on the one hand, we have uh, Nafse mutmainna. So you see, there are three levels of behavior. One is the nafse ammara, which is the lowest level, and basically you can say that Western economic theory deals with only nafse ammara. So nafse ammara is exactly the concept of just pursuing your desires, and these desires always lead us astray. And so Islam has a very strong negative view of the same thing which is considered positive in economics. In economics, you are taught that we have the job of the economist is to fulfill all desires. But in Islam, we are taught that the basic needs are valid and genuine, and it is good to fulfill those. But the idle desires, hawa, that is not permissible to fulfill. And we have to control and restrain our idle desires. So this is a radical difference. And if you work on that, then you can... Nafs al-Mutmainna is the portion of the soul which calls us towards the good. So how we can get that to dominate, that requires us to control our nafs, which is actually the opposite of the teaching of the West, that we should indulge our nafs. And the route to happiness is by just fulfilling any desire that comes into your heart. And that is wrong. So, the values and the skills that we learn are designed to take us from the nafse ammara to the nafse mutmainna. And these are all built on the foundation of the purpose of life. So basically, if you want to study human behavior, this is the crucial missing point and the distinguishing point of the Islamic approach, that it starts with a valid analysis of human behavior. And the valid analysis, which is different from the Western analysis, is that the human heart is a battleground between good and evil. We have simultaneously good and bad tendencies, and everyone has this. And so Allah Ta'ala says that لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ التَّقْوِيمِ ثُمَّ رَدَدْنَاهُ أَسْفَلَ سَافِلِينَ. So inside the human, there is the capability and the potential to rise above the angels, and also there is the capability and the potential to go below the animals. And these two tendencies are at war with each other. And Allah Ta'ala says that إِنَّ سَعْيَكُمْ لَشَتَّى. So different people have different purposes. So this idea that everyone is driven solely by the desire to maximize his pleasure, this is wrong. If you look at human behavior, there are very few people like that. There are some people like that, but very, very few. The vast majority have complex motivations. So if we want to understand human behavior, and that's the basis of any social science, then we have to identify what are the goals for which people are striving. That will be the positive part. And these goals are often determined by the social environment, by the conditioning, by how they are brought up, by what are the messages in the media that surround them. And so that will give us a start, and then on understanding human behavior. But we don't stress there, because we think that lots of human behaviors are self-harming. People cause harm to themselves because they pursue desires which are not good for them. So Islam teaches us to transform those, to tame our nafs. So for example, there is the ayat, لَن تَنَالُوا الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُوا مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ. So you will not achieve goodness until you spend that which you love. So this is actually training for the nafs. You take the thing which you love the most and you give it away. That actually has a very shocking effect on the nafs, because the nafs is very strongly against that. So this is a way to train your nafs and so these are the strategies and techniques which Islam teaches us in order to move from nafse ammara, from the dominance of nafse ammara, to the dominance of nafse mutmainna. Now, the Western social theory is based solely and purely on nafse ammara, and Islamic theory looks at all three stages of behavior. There is nafse ammara, nafs al-lawwama and nafs mutmainna. So in the middle stage, you have this nafs al-lawwama, which sometimes act on your pleasure and does bad things, and then it blames itself. It says that I did that thing, but it was wrong. And so this is a conscience which all of us are weak, and all of us in moments of weakness do things that we know are wrong, and then we feel that this was a mistake that I made. And if you feel regretful and if you make tawbah, then Allah Ta'ala accepts and changes, and that creates a positive change inside you. So even that is a training, and that you learn from your mistakes. So basically, from the Quranic lens, the entrepreneur, he is providing a service, he is a steward. This is very different from the capitalist model, which says that I am the absolute owner of my property, I can do whatever I like with it. The liberals go so far as to say that, you know, you have an absolute right to your wealth. Even if there is a starving person next to you and you want to feed your breadcrumbs to the dogs, you have the right to do so, because your property is your will and whatever is your pleasure should take place. So Islam does not allow that. Islam says that anything that is given to you is actually an amana. It doesn't belong to you in an absolute sense. Everything belongs to Allah, but Allah Ta'ala has made you temporary owner of that. And then after that, it will pass to others. So you have to take the property that you have as a trust. Does not belong to you absolutely, and you cannot do with it everything that you want to. So the purpose of this entrepreneurship is to reach Allah by doing things which will be pleasing. The pattern on which we act is the pattern set by our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. There is a huge amount of wisdom about the process of tijara, because the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam himself did tijara in his pre-prophetic time, and his wife was a businesswoman. And there are many ahadith about the role of business and how it is useful. It provides halal rizq for it's an important part of economy, and so on. And there are large numbers of regulations and rules which tajirs are salesman is supposed to follow. One of them is, for example, that if there is a product that you are selling which has a defect, then you must reveal that defect. This is opposite of the Western principle, which says that caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. If you are selling a defective product, it's the buyer's business to find it out. And if you can fool him and get a profit, so much the better for you. You made a profit. This is exactly how the global financial crisis happened, because the mortgages became a saleable commodity for a complex set of reasons that I won't describe. So originally, people were giving mortgages to people, and then they had to give them huge loans, and then they would get paid back over a 30-year period. So they had to make sure that this person is reliable and he can pay back over 30 years. But later on, when they found out that I can take this mortgage and sell it to somebody else, then create a mortgage, which is a stream of payments which will pay you $100,000 over a long period of time, and then you can sell it for $50,000 or $80,000, depending on the market. So now you can sell to anybody, because you don't care whether or not that person will be able to make payments. So this is what happened. The people were going out, the salesmen were going out to the street and picking a random person, saying, hey, you want to buy a house? I'll give you a mortgage. They didn't check the income. They didn't check anything. Because once you have a person who signs the mortgage contract, you can sell it for $100,000 to somebody else and let the person be default and let the other person have the headache. And so that is what happened when this has started happening on a large scale. So people were selling defective products, which is haram according to Islamic principles, but halal according to Western business principles. And that led to the global financial crisis. All right, so I'm just going to conclude this talk by mentioning some examples of what has been achieved. So there's a micro-entrepreneurship course which has been designed. They have trained 5,000 people, just taking random people on how to start, run your own small business, which could be just like the Smithji type of business. Yani you set up your own little shop at the corner. And these people have gone on to do great things, and they have managed to feed their family. Even if they, if their business model doesn't expand hugely, it takes care of the needs, which is all you need. You don't need a grand vision to set up a corporate global chain. You just need to do enough business to be able to take care of your needs, and that you can teach. And so he mentions that 5,000 people, they have done a wide range of very diverse business, because basically you say that, okay, let's look at what you have and let's look at what you can do with it. And so everybody comes from a different background. They have different kinds of skills. They have access to different kinds of resources. So every business plan is tailored to the person himself. There is no template which is given to all people. There are larger examples. I'm just three examples of the same type of Islamic business model which has been used on a high level. One is called the Ghani Glass Company. And these have the, all of these businesses are combined by the idea behind them, which is that business is a form of worship. It is not, so this is radically different from anything that you can find in the Western models. So Ghani Glass is a huge chain, which is sort of going multinational now, but it's one of the large businesses in Pakistan. And their model says that our goal is to worship Allah in the best possible way and to use the business model to create people who will follow Islamic principles. They have more than 5,000 employees, and their key performance indicator is how many people are praying five times a day. And furthermore, as the boss, he can compel anybody to do that, but that's not their model. It's a voluntary and a persuasion model. So they have highly motivated employees, because you see, the Western business model says that I buy your time, and the you do what I want you to do. You don't have actually ownership in the business. You are just an employee. You work instead for wages. Now, the Islamic business model says we are all working together to produce a service to the community. So now, even if you are doing something like cleaning the floors, you are a participant, you are a co-owner of the business. You are doing a small job, but that small job is part. So you take pride in the service which is being provided, because you are given ownership psychologically, as opposed to the employee relationship, in which the boss, you have no ownership, you're just a wage slave. So this is one important aspect of the Islamic model. Okay, there are many many such things. There's ID Fresh in India, which is another Islamic business. It has motivation that ethics and values are based on Islamic principles. It acts with benevolence and service to humanity. It's based on zero interest. The business was started, and also Ghani Glass is also the same. They don't take any loans, and they don't use any interest in their models. And they wanted to show that it is possible to conduct business without taking loans and without using interest. And they have succeeded in doing so. So they follow ethical principles. They are not motivated by profits directly. So they have refused to do business which would be very profitable if it violates ethical principles. And it has reached 1 billion Indian rupee in from starting from zero. Similarly, there is this holdings company in Morocco, which works by similar principles. It's a 3 billion company, and the man is the sixth richest man in Africa. He has a strong stance against alcohol. He builds mosques wherever his business is, and he encourages employees to pray. And so basically, that's the last slide, I think. And so the point that I'm trying to make, and unfortunately, you see, one thing I would like to say at the end is that yesterday I had a talk like this at Ibn Khaldun University, where we talked for 4 hours. We had 2 hours in which I explained the models, and then 2 hours where the students discussed with me. So the ideas are complex, different, and are based on many different aspects which I haven't been able to discuss in this short time. And so, and because they are very, 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 very strongly opposed to mainstream ideas, they will automatically create many questions which you will not be able to answer. But I have a lot of lectures and videos on YouTube and internet and on my website, asadzaman.net. But there are more than 100 videos, all of them over an hour. So you have to be patient. I have just given you a sketch of a possibility. I haven't given you all the arguments and pro and con. I've just given some basic core principles. And I've shown you that such a thing is possible today, that the message that came and transformed lives 1400 years ago is just as powerful today. And we have been deceived by false and misleading messages into following principles which are harmful to us, harmful to our society, and contrary to our religion. So I'll stop here, and then we can have question and answers. Yes.
Any questions?
Yes. Okay, that's a very good question. Basically, you see, Islam provides us with a set of principles, and then the situation that we are in requires a creative application. So when the Sahaba, they went out into Rome and into Egypt, they encountered things which they had never seen before. And then they worked with their imagination to see how would Islam apply to this new situation that we have. And then they did, and you can find all three. They said, okay, this particular practice we have never seen before, but it is un-Islamic, ban that. This particular practice, it's perfectly in conformity with Islam, so we accept that as it is. And this practice, it's more or less right, but it needs some modification. So all three examples you can find when the Sahaba encountered entirely new situations. So today also, we have the principles which are solid and invariant, and then we have the situation which is changing continuously. So today, what we need to do is to creatively apply the Islamic principles to the new situation, and that will create responses which are new, like this Entrepreneurship Plus model, which is a new model based on, which is adapted to the situation of today, but based on Islamic principles. So there is this example that I give, that when the Israelis created their new state, they said our national language should be Hebrew, which is reasonable, but there were no living speakers of Hebrew. It has not been spoken for centuries. So when they wanted to revive this as a living language, then they had a problem. The consonants, they did not know how to pronounce because there were no living speakers. So they invented an approximation. Just like that, today, Islam has become a stranger to the Muslims. And so now we have no living models of how an Islamic society functions. Because Islam is not a theory, not a philosophy, it's a way of life. Now this way of life does not exist on this planet. There is no Khalifa. Our courts are not based on Sharia. Our tijara is not based on Islamic principles. Our society is run on entirely different patterns. So when it comes to social, political, cultural, educational, take any dimension, there is no living model of Islam. So we have to recreate it from scratch, and this is the effort that is called the jihad, that fi sabilillah, this is actually the jihad, how to create an Islamic society. And one important thing to understand in the process of this struggle is that Islam is not outcome oriented. So it doesn't matter whether if we try to achieve a good society and we fail, that is not relevant, because Allah Ta'ala does not look at whether you succeed or whether you fail. He looks at whether you tried. So it's very process oriented. As long as you try, whether you are a ghazi or whether you are a shaheed, this doesn't matter. So this is very important, because Muslims say that no, today the circumstances are very difficult and it's impractical and it's utopian and it cannot be done. See, the paradigm to think about is that this little bulbul was carrying a drop of water in her beak to put out the fire which was made by Namrud for Ibrahim alayhis salam. So the birds asked him that, what are you doing? Are you crazy? Look at the size of the fire and look at the little drop. What can you do? I mean, this is hopeless. So he said, well, on the day of judgment, when Allah Ta'ala asks me what you were doing when my Khalil was being burnt, I will say I was doing whatever was in my power. So that is exactly the same as the, yani, do what you can do. If everyone, yani, you're not responsible to solve the problems of the ummah, but if you can solve the problem of your neighbor, you have done what needs to be done. And if everybody solves the problem of their neighbor, then the whole ummah will rise as we want. So these are the long answer to your question. Yes. All right. Now, this is actually a very, very, very red herring. See, what happened was that Adam Smith, and there's multiple layers of deception involved in the process which creates this question. Adam Smith was not in favor of selfishness. He spoke many times against selfish behavior, and he did advocate self-interest. But later, the economists in the 1930s and later deliberately misinterpreted his message. So Mankiw says that people are driven by selfishness and attributes this to Adam Smith, thereby deceiving the people. So now, when the Islamic economists said that we should adopt capitalist economies and modify it to make it Islamic, then they were faced with this problem that selfishness is not compatible with Islam. So they said, okay, no, economists are not really talking about selfishness, they are talking about self-interest. So there's confusion upon confusion about confusion. Self-interest, yani, is irrelevant. Yani, the reason that we talk about, the reason this question arises is that how can we make Western economics compatible with Islam, and we can do so by reinterpreting selfishness as self-interest. But this is not a relevant question. Islam has its own method, own characteristics, own behavior, in which, you know, these terms don't matter. Only if you think that Islamic economics has to be constructed by taking the Western model, then this is a serious problem, because now you have to say selfishness I cannot accept. So let me change the interpretation to something which is compatible with Islam, and which also can be traced back to Adam Smith. So it provides you a justification, but it's not correct justification, because economic theory is not based on self-interest, it's based on selfishness. Yes. All of these businesses make profits.
Share with the workers in the same company. And you take some kind of analysis, some kind of study, how much has been distributed.
Oh, employee satisfaction is very high, turnover is very low relative to normal businesses. So if that's a criteria, it means that the employees are happy with this business. Yes. Yes.
And I just avoid that misunderstanding about Islamic economy. When you say there is no interest,
yeah.